Welcome. Welcome. Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send in a question or a favorite recipe, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com or visit our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you would like to hear prior shows, they are archived on our website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thanks. Now let's get started. This time we're going to be talking about control. And as leaders, that's one of the things we try to have is some control over the group so that we can lead them towards consensus and towards a successful outcome. Right, right. So let's start with one of our basic questions, and then we'll see what our topics are going to be, and we'll go from there and be practical. The question is, what types of control do we as leaders need when we have the group? For the group dynamic, what types of control do we have to have? Oh, I see we have lots of people. Thank you all for being here and for all of your participation. I think that we've got kind of consensus in our way. A lot of people are talking about control over the process itself, right? Yeah, we need to control that. We're going to do the topics like we often do, but some people are new. Hello to everyone. We're going to set out our topics, and then we're going to talk about them in a practical manner because we're practical people. Yeah, and we want to know what to do, not just what theory is. So we need control over the process as leaders. Yes, I think this is going to be separate. People are talking about transparency. Yeah, we need to have control over transparency, both our own and our participants. Yes, and anybody else we deal with. Now, here's one that's near and dear to our hearts because we talk about it all the time on these shows. Prior shows archived on the website, recipeforpeacenow.com. The civility rules, we need control over them because we're the enforcers of the civility rules as well as the models for it, right? Right. And I think our fourth topic under what kind of leadership control do we need is going to be, I'm going to call it media outreach. Whatever is said to the media kind of be filtered a little bit, right? Yeah, we need a little bit of control over that. So let's get started on these. The first one we talked about is control over the process itself. Adrian and others are using what I think might be an Americanism, but there's probably a translation in all kinds of languages. Adrian says you need, in order to control the process and to have it work, you need to keep everyone in the loop. In the loop. It means that if something is sent out, everybody needs to be able to be on the email list. Or if the email list is to specific teams, that has to be done properly too, right? Yes. And of course, you can use those services where you make groups and talk to each other online or in Skype or in conference calls or in person if people are that close. Sometimes I do multinationals and my participants are very far away from each other physically. But nobody's very far away anymore with the internet, right? So you keep everyone in the loop. As leader, I ask to be included in all of the team emails. I want to see them. All right, sometimes I'm kind of too busy. I want my assistant to see them and analyze how we're doing and that everybody is really, well, doing their assignments, on the right track, working towards the goal. That kind of a thing. Yes, I as leader want to be in everybody's loop, and you should too, so that you know how things are going and whether or not, you know, if we've broken off into teams, for example, sometimes some teams are kind of not doing so well, and you need to reach out to them and say, can I be of assistance? How's it going? That kind of a thing. You never be rude, of course. We're going to talk about that when we get to the civility rules. But sometimes people need a little bit of direction, Sometimes you can see that a group of participants, or maybe a single participant, but they're in the process, so things are going up and back, emails, and links and things like that, and hopefully even on phone calls. If we're going to have a conference call, sometimes I'd like to be in on it too as leader, so that I can see where we're headed, right? And sometimes you can see that maybe we're not all headed in the same direction, kind of. Some people have gotten turned around. It's not a crime, but you should know about it with immediacy. So, A, you can get everybody marching together, and B, so that no one wastes a lot of time and effort on kind of a side issue that really has no bearing to what they're supposed to be doing. They've just kind of gotten off the path. Yeah, people are saying sometimes they're doing something that they're interested in, but it's not going to help. That's true, too. You know, people are very curious and very fascinated, and especially if you've got volunteers, they are very, very interested in the topic, right, or the issues. And sometimes we've got a specific goal in mind. Put something on a voting ballot, right? Get people to vote for it, right? Yes. And it's easy to accidentally slide sideways into an interesting corollary topic, but not the one that we've got to get done now. Yeah? Yeah. It's not, nobody's doing it deliberately. It just kind of happens. And you have to a little bit watch for that, because you don't want to waste time and effort and then have somebody come back with some completely not helpful. Okay, we'll call it that. Not helpful. So you have to keep everybody in the loop, especially the leader, us, so that we can determine how it's going. Right? Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cyrus says that's keeping track of progress, and it is. And it's easier than making people do, well, you could have the various teams and the various people send in an update, a report. It's kind of a time consumer, and it's kind of something you have to force people to do, unless you're in a corporate setting and that's how they do it, and people are used to it, and they really want to, and they everybody wants to see the report, right? Right, yeah. Because a report is seen by everybody, at least in my world it is, because it tells everyone how we're doing, what we need. A lot of times at the end of the report, I ask people to say if they need anything, any kind of help, any kind of, if there's going to be a time period when they need extra folk, and like that. Yeah, because that's interesting too. And a lot of times the other people in the group would be willing. They just don't know that they need to, right? Yeah. So keep everybody in the loop, and keep track of progress. And I do like to see an update to everybody, depending on how often it needs to be. That's up to you as leader. Mm-hmm. People are saying weekly. Maybe for something that goes very fast and is a short-term effort, a push that has a real deadline to it. I think weekly is a little bit much unless you're on real high alert mode. You know what I mean? Really, really need to get something done right now, this minute, because it has to go on a ballot or something. There's a deadline, and the deadline must be reached, or else you failed. You can't do it anymore. For things that are going to take a little longer, I think every 2 weeks, maybe monthly, not less than monthly, in my opinion. Excuse me, I took a sip of water. If you have less than monthly for a report, like quarterly, maybe for something that's very slow-moving and going to take a real long time and is in process. But I think monthly is good, because then you can see that everybody's still on track. Because quarterly, wow, you've wasted a lot of time if it's not quite it, right? Yeah. I like to get together and think on it and talk about it, especially. Mm-hmm. What other control do we have over the process? Suki and others are saying you need to be available for questions as the leader. Yes, you do. You need to be available to answer questions about what we're supposed to be doing. Is this a good idea? that kind of questions. Do I answer questions like, I need help. Yeah? To be available, to have people ask you questions and ask for help, which is kind of asking a question, but yeah. You as the leader, one of the things you must do in order to have control or in order to be a good leader is to be available for questions. Mm-hmm. This is a good point, too, that George and others are saying. When you're available for questions and for leadership and for help, the another thing you need to know how to do in order to maintain control over the process is, as George says, you need to know when to call in an expert. You need to know when to call in an expert. And you need to be able to admit that you don't have the expertise. There's no sin in that. Just like your participants need to be able to admit that, we need to be able to admit it too. I don't know. Let's find out. Let's call in an expert. Let's do some research. Let's see who in the field knows the answer to this question. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you know who to call and when to call in an expert. Who is an expert is easier than when. Mm-hmm. 'Cause you have to know when you really need someone, when you really need outside help. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which leads us to transparency, which is our next topic. Mm-hmm. Because when you're thinking about calling in an expert and you're thinking about the process and like that, everything needs to have transparency. And transparency means there are no hidden agendas, no secrets. If we don't know something, we try to find out. If we need to call someone in, we find out who to call in. Mm-hmm. Joyce and others are saying transparency also is to determine the facts as foundation. Yes, facts and truth are surprisingly open to interpretation, right? We think we understand the facts, and if those are the facts, we understand what's true and what needs to be done. Seems straightforward, doesn't it? Yeah, I understand this. These are the facts. This is our foundational information. Ah, gee. Not so fast. Because I think that one of the things that we're going to need to do is to use our process to do some research, to do some thinking, because we need to know how much is actual fact. How much money we have in the bank is an actual fact. And how much is open, it seems like a fact, but it's really open to interpretation. And maybe even some other active group has interpreted the facts in an entirely different way, right? Yeah. And sometimes we've just looked at them in a way that we're thinking, but isn't the same way as others. Does that make any sense? Yeah, people are asking for an example. When I make this little talk to my folk because we're fighting over facts and whether they're really facts or not, I use an example from my anthropology days. Yes, I majored in anthropology at one time. And you know there's certain societies, and this is a global show, some of you might belong to one, that had this as a traditional thought. It's in the past, probably, but there were societies that valued body lice. Now, you don't think probably most of us are not real big on the thought of body lice because they're little parasite things and they bite. Yeah, isn't it nasty? But there were societies that greatly valued them because they felt that body lice were an indication of health, that you were in good health, that you were strong and vital, and that not having body lice was a really bad thing. And they came to this conclusion, this factual, in their eyes, conclusion, because they noticed that when a person gets sick, their body lice leave because they're parasites and the host is sick. It's going to die. I mean, when you get a fever, the body lice all leave you and go to somebody else that's in better shape, right? So the conclusion was drawn, the factual conclusion was drawn, that body lice are good for you. They're healthy. Because only healthy people have them. Any questions? Yeah. See, facts are open to interpretation. And then we found out that really body lice are not all that good a thing. And they're just parasites. They're bugs, so to speak. Your fact and my fact might be a little different because we've looked at the same thing and drawn a different conclusion, a different fact out of it. So you got to be careful about that. You got to talk about it. You got to see what your facts are. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, people are talking about research on the internet. Yeah, it's kind of a concept. The internet is fabulous. You can find anything. But you have to actually research a little deeper, even if it's gone and validated what you thought, and you go, hot diggity, it's valid. I'm in. This is a fact. Well, let's see what other sides are saying. Let's see all the facts so that we can make an informed decision. Yeah. Thomas says, and a lot of people are saying that you need to listen and be open to new ideas, even about your facts, right? Mm-hmm. Because we say we need to be transparent about the facts. Well, yeah. I'm especially big on transparency. I don't like the sin of omission, where people haven't exactly lied, but they haven't brought forward all the facts within their knowledge. That goes to transparency, and it also goes to process, too. If I know something that will impact our discussion, and I keep it to myself, I've lacked transparency. I have been deceptive. Now, did I actually outright lie to the group? Well, technically, I suppose not. But have I been untruthful? Yep, you have. Have I violated the rules of transparency and reasonable process? Yes, you have. Because you knew something and you didn't tell us. And I always say, tell us everything, even if you don't think it makes any difference. Even if it seems stupid, right? Tell us anyway, because somewhere in the back of our heads, we might store that, and it might become relevant along the line. You'd be surprised. Yeah. So you need to have transparency in what you know, and transparency in what you think you know, at least, right? Because we just discussed that what you actually know, well, it might or might not be a fact. Yeah. Muhammad and others are breaking out the concept of the 5W questions. He says the 5W questions to understand the participants. Yes, if we're talking about transparency and what people want and their ideas, right? We are going to need to break out the 5W questions. In fact, we do it each time we get together. This is true. Excuse me. Took a sip of water. Excuse me. The 5W questions are who, what, where, when, and why. Who, what, where, when, and why. I know, and a lot of folk ask me each time we break those out, if you ask them all in sequence. No, you break them out when you need them, right? Yeah. But they're good for transparency because then you know and you understand people's positions. And if you understand why someone has a position, well, then you've gotten half the battle. You understand why they're reacting in the way they are, for one thing, right? And that is invaluable. It's very important to know that because people react viscerally to things, right? We do too. And who, what, where, when, and why are very important. They take on different amounts of importance depending on what your topic is, what you need, right? For example, with this transparency, we would like to know why, well, we'd like to know what kind of information do you have? Why are you interpreting it that way? Who, what, where did you get it? Who told you? What do you know? Where did you get it? Who, what, where? When did you find out? Because, well, if you found out after we had started as a group, that's different than if you were known for years. And sometimes information, especially in today's day and age with all kinds of devices and things, sometimes information does go stale, right? The when may be who, what, where, when. The when may be in my childhood. Ah, gee, maybe we should relook at that. Because your childhood wasn't that, it was kind of a long time ago. And why should be asked, of course, very politely. Because it's really asking, why do you hold that belief? Mm-hmm. Why do you think so? And that must be asked sincerely and politely. Right, right. The 5W questions. Mm-hmm. Yes, Muhammad and Ellen and others are saying that if you ask the questions and you find things out, that it will build a strong group dynamic. And it will. You'll get a very, we talk about a strong group dynamic, and one of the ways we do that is by carefully listening to each other, thinking about new ideas, because that's why we came together as a group, so we could get something done, and thinking about the 5W questions, which are asked of the leader also. Who, what, where, when, and why? Each one of those questions is trotted out when you need them. Sometimes in private, during the timeouts, the leader might come up to someone and ask a question like that so he or she can find out what's really going on, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that leads us to the civility rules. Yes, I'm going to, people are saying you're going to get in a recipe. I know a lot of you like the recipes at the very end. I am going to really try to make some time. The last few times we have not done a recipe, for those of you that weren't here, we just had a wonderful conversation and we didn't quite make the time-wise. It's only an hour show, which is really too short, but more than that's kind of a long show. We've thought about it because people keep saying, well, why don't you make it an hour and a half show? It'd give you a little extra time. It's being thought on. I'm not certain that that's not a format that's a little too long. Haven't kind of decided yet. You guys can vote. Whatever you think we'll do. So civility rules. That leads us to the who, what, where, when, and why, and the transparency and the process itself. Now we're going to find out how we're going to act during this whole process and how we're going to act during questioning, mm-hmm, and during getting together to really make a difference, to get something done. And that's the civility rules, right? Yeah. The civility rules are the only rules the Recipe for Peace Now actually has. Everything else is kind of a suggestion and goes to whatever your topic is, whatever it is that you're trying to do, right? Yes. But the civility rules are important and must be enforced as leader, right? And they're kind of self-enforcing amongst peers, too. You can use peer pressure. We'll talk about that in a second. So what are the civility rules? Essentially speaking, the civility rules say we will not be rude to each other. We will not be rude. We will take our legitimate turn. We will take turns. We will act politely. We won't roll our eyes, jingle change, use electronic devices, etc., when someone is telling us something, speaking. We will have turns speaking, and everybody will get their opinion in. The civility rules. We will act civil to each other, right? Right, yes. Priya and others are saying that for the civility rules to work, the leader has to have control and enforce them, pardon me, immediately, consistently, and fairly. Immediately, consistently, and fairly, right? Yes. In fact, Kali and others are talking about that they need to be announced at the beginning when we have our transparency talk. Yes. The civility rules, I do announce them. I don't assume, and sometimes I am pleasantly surprised, and it would have been fine, I don't assume that my people, my participants, understand how to work in a group, and I don't assume that they innately understand how to be civil, how to be polite, right? I don't think that it's an assumption that you can make. And yeah, no, it has nothing to do with, people are talking about age differences. Nothing to do with it. It has to do with, sometimes with the topic. Excuse me, I'm taking a sip of water. My voice seems to be going. Excuse me. Sometimes with the topic. But a lot of times the civility rules have the actual enforcement and announcement. I make an announcement anyway. Some groups don't need it as much, primarily because some groups are more in agreement with each other than others, right? Yeah. They're more, well, they're more naturally civil because they're trying to get something done as a force, as a group. They know what they want done, and they all want the same thing. Makes for a more civil group. The question is, how do we get it? And if they're very amenable to trying different things and like that, they're civil to each other, especially if they've known each other before. Some groups are somewhat internally hostile. It's not that they don't want the outcome, but they are, maybe they're hostile because of different outside influences. They know each other and they dislike each other. Yeah, yeah. You know, there's all kinds of different kinds of hostility. We do indeed talk about the civility rules a lot in prior shows. RecipeForPeaceNow.com is where they're archived. People are asking how you know. Even if you're not real experienced, and you get more experienced as you go on and have more time to deal with groups and to group dynamics and reaching consensus and like that, if there is true hostility, I think you will know walking in the room. It has to do with body language, tone of voice, their reaction to you as the third party impartial. I get called in, I guess I see a lot of groups that have to have the civility rule designated for them. And quite frankly, the base civility rule is we will not be rude to each other. But depending on the group, you flesh that out with more rules, right? Yeah. Whatever bad thing they've been doing is now against the rules. Mm-hmm. So the civility rules are kind of fluid. They are adaptable to whatever the situation is. And I get called in a lot after a group has basically speaking failed, right? Yeah, it's just teetering over there. And it is having hostility, right? And you need to set out the rule, and I've got to bring them back together because they've reached an impasse. It's ugly. For some reason, that group must be a group. There's a lot of different reasons, most of them being political and having to do with level of employment in a multinational, for example. All these kind of managers are in this group. Mm-hmm. And it would be bad to be excluded. So, these are hostile situations. I announce that I'm in control and this is how it's going to be, and the civility rules are now in effect. And these are the civility rules. And then I delineate the ones that this group needs, right? Right. The main rule is that I'm the leader. I enforce the civility rules. You could have to announce them each time. I've had that. Where every time we get together, I have to reiterate the civility rules, right? Right. And then we go from there. Yeah. The key is to make it a successful group, one that can really reach consensus, Because if it can't reach consensus, what kind of a group have you got? Yeah. So the civility rules immediately, consistently, and fairly, right? Everybody gets treated equal. You're the third party impartial. Now, it is true that you're also a human, and so am I. And sometimes you really do think that one side or the other's really, really got a lock on good sense over there. And you're kind of going, oh, my goodness, really? You think that? I don't know. So that happens. That is unavoidable, but you don't show it. Because you as leader are the model for civility. If you're not civil, if you lose your temper, if you treat someone unfairly, if you don't enforce the civility rules consistently and fairly, you've been a bad example of them. If you're a bad example, you cannot get other people to follow. You can't. Because they look to your example and they go, you don't have to do it. Why should I? Yeah. Leaders are always the model of civility rules. We never lose our temper. We never jump in and not be in somebody else's turn. We never show favoritism, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. We might have an opinion, but we keep it to ourselves. And it may help us to form the opinion to create a stronger group dynamic because we understand where everybody is coming from. We understand their who, what, where, when, and why. Mm-hmm. Yes. You know, that's a good point that I always tell people, and I'm glad that you people actually think so. Hello, guys. Jackson and others are saying that if you truly internalize the civility rules, it'll spill over into life once you've been taught them. Yeah, they're not just for sitting in a room full of people negotiating something. They are for living, right? Yes. If you treat people in a civil manner, they will reciprocate. If you treat people in a civil manner, even though they've gotten in your face and tried to fight with you, A, it'll confuse them, and B, it will prevent them from doing that again because you're no fun. Bullies like to fight. They like the reaction. Yeah. Our next one is media outreach. Mm-hmm. I know this, yes. A lot of you are in favor of confiscating electronic devices before we get in the room, when we get in the room, and of not having them with you even when we're on call or Skype. And you know if somebody's looking at something else because they're going, And then you say, what is your opinion? They go, oh, I wasn't listening. Yeah, not a good thing. So confiscating devices, as in put them all on a table. I'm going to say what you guys say I say all the time. I'm going to say it depends. It depends on the group. That's not something I do right off before we get a group dynamic, before we even see each other, before I've made my civility rules speech. As time progresses, you might feel that you need to have kind of a everybody put their devices on the table thing. I'm not big on it. I try to tell people that I expect them to act like adults and not pass notes in class because, after all, texting and instant messaging and stuff is the new notes in class thing, right? Right. And you know people have done it because they're sitting there giggling and looking. And they look up and then they giggle. Yeah. No. I'm not big on the everybody confiscation because, A, it's insulting to those who would never dream of being that rude and horrible and of breaching a civility rule. And it makes people antsy. They keep glancing over at their thing. This way they know it's in their purse and they can hug it or their pocket. And I don't know about you, but I think a lot of my participants all have the same basic device. They can co-mingle, which is truly awful. Yeah. kind of like, no, I don't think so. I've asked you to put it away. Let's do it. Let's put it away. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I do. I ask for people to put their devices away because it just prevents everyone from blogging and like that. Not only, and then people have instantaneous reporting now. You know, there's an expression, it's from an American, the historic American. Benjamin Franklin said that no one should see sausage of the law being made. It's true. You don't want to report on what we're doing as we're doing it because, first of all, you haven't formed your proper opinion about it. You have to think on it. And second of all, you haven't given thought to what you're writing. I see some very strange things. I do have a strict rule. Comes under the civility rules and under media outreach. That we will not report on the proceedings while we're in them. First of all, you can't concentrate on what's coming next. Second of all, you're going to say something you're going to later regret because it's going to come out funny because it was done on the fly. And third of all, how can you fully participate and listen if you're busy with your phone? Yeah. We will not be reporting and texting and blogging and like that while we're sitting here because those things last forever and the media can pick and choose little pieces out. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. So I am not that big on confiscation of media devices. I'm very big on not using them to report on us as you sit here. Right? Right. Mm-hmm. Yes, Bobby and others are saying that you need to have a designated spokesperson. Yes. Very important, especially if you're doing something that you would like to be in the media. You'd like people to know that your group exists. You'd like people to think about your topic, your issues, what it is you're doing, and support you, right? So media is a fabulous tool for that. It's not all evil and people trying to misquote your blog. No, it's fabulous. But you need to have a spokesperson for your group so that you've got a unified front. So that there's somebody to call and ask questions of. And no, it does not have to be the leader. The leader's a little bit of a natural choice. We tend to be outgoing. And we've got an idea of what needs to be said and what doesn't need to be said. There's a little more media if you've got opposition groups to your way of thinking. And they use media quite a bit, right? Media should be controlled. And that's what we're talking about, control. So that it presents a unified front. We all know what we're doing, right? And that it presents a positive light, right? Yeah. Media should be controlled. It should be, there should be a spokesperson to actually talk to the media. But even so, it needs to be, we need to decide how much we want to let out. And if we need the public on our side, right? If we need more folk, if we're doing fundraising or something, the media is fabulous. Mm-hmm. Harini and others are talking about prohibiting media contact, as in you can't talk to a reporter. Sometimes reporters still do gang up on things. Yeah. Media outreach, I would ask that instead of prohibiting that whoever it is that is asking should point to the leader and find out who's been designated. We could have more than one person be a media spokesperson because we could have complex issues and have someone really be up to date and really ready to talk about certain factors but not about others. Right? Yeah. And so you take them to the groups that are similar-minded in their respect. Mm-hmm. We want to get some more fundraising especially. So prohibit, I don't know if that's even possible, but control is very possible, especially if you tell people why. Yeah, I answer the 5W questions all the time as leader because it's important. That goes to transparency. That goes to the process. Ask me who, what, where, when, and why. Because then you'll understand how come we're doing this, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So at the beginning of this show, we talked about taking control, but we also talked about giving control. Because as leader, we generally have control over the situation. We're in charge. But sometimes you need to bring someone else in, and they need to control the situation, or at least a portion of it. Mm-hmm. So when does that happen? When do we give some of our control, some of our power, really, over to someone else? When does that happen? When do we give up and some of our, what we like control, but we need to let someone else in? Mm-hmm. Yeah, Sharon and others are talking about needing expert help. We've given it our best shot. We've done all the things we know how to do, and we need to bring in an expert to help us make a decision, to help us decide which path to go down. We might have several successful paths to go down. Yeah, it's not necessarily even then you're in trouble. It's just what is it that we need to know in order to go forward. So we give some control to an expert. Mm-hmm. This is true, too. Paul and others are saying that you give some control when you need to share your control with another group. Well, yeah, sometimes there's some sort of an issue that's really good. Oh, curing some sort of a disease, right? And there's kind of a lot of groups kind of all enthusiastic, but we're all doing the same thing, and we keep reinventing the wheel, which is wasting resources, wasting money. And so sometimes you go and you say, let's need to share our resources and our members and like that. But then you've got the control that someone else's leader has over their group. Yes, why should you come in and take control of my group? I'm the leader here. Mm-hmm. And the answer is, let's each give a little. Let's get together. Let's be co-chairs. Let's both control, because we need the person power. We need the resources. We need the whatever it is that we need. Let's get together, and instead of having a power struggle, right, let's get together and see where we have, where we are the same. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So control could be shared. Mm-hmm. Maybe even 50-50. It's hard to, you know, it's hard to say how much control you have as opposed to mine, unless there's an egregious difference. But if it's the everybody's fairly equal, then generally speaking, your control is still fairly equal too. And the trick is to get the followers to follow the group as a whole and not just their leader, because they've gotten used to their leader, right? Right. Mm-hmm. When else should we give control? This is a real good point that Tilly and Hussein and others are making. Sometimes you have to give control because your funding has requirements. Yes. Sometimes you have to give up some control because your funding has requirements. I'll cover your loans, I'll cover your debts, I will do something for you monetarily, and in exchange, fill in the blank. Because basically speaking, free money's not free, right? Yeah, you have to do something proactive in order to get the funding. And one of the things you need to do is to concede some control. Mm-hmm. The good point, too, Hussein says that sometimes you need to have an influencer and they need an honorarium position, right? Yes, sometimes you need to give up some control because you don't have enough clout and your group really doesn't. You need a champion. Hussein calls an influencer. Yeah, you need somebody to say, you know, this is a really good idea and I'm an important person and everybody knows me. Like a celebrity, people talk about celebrities. I find celebrity endorsements kind of annoying unless they're for something that I think celebrities use, like drugs. No, just kidding about that. Pardon me. An influencer is times someone who has worked for quite a while on the issues and is glad to see a group to do some of the legwork, but they're well known in the community, right? Yes. And so they are important voices, especially if you want media attention. You know, we acted before like we don't want the media to know anything. We've got a tight-lipped spokesperson who says, go away, essentially speaking, but in a nicer manner. Sometimes you actually crave the media. You want them because you want people to be on your side. You need the public to either actually vote or kind of vote for you so that things can get done, right? Right. So sometimes the influencers have requirements, something they want, just like the funders have requirements. People, we should give control when there's team participation. Different teams have different leadership styles, says Elizabeth. Yes, different leaders change their leadership style somewhat also, depending on the group. At least I do. Some groups might be cultural, might be corporate cultural, which is what I mainly see. Some groups just want you to lead them. They want you to take control completely, tell them what to do, keep track of it to make sure that they're doing what they're supposed to do right, and let's get to our successful outcome and we're done. Some groups like more democracy. They like to talk everything over. They like to know the reason why for everything. It's a slightly different leadership style, right? Yeah. And you see that from your group dynamic. I don't try to force groups with an actual style, especially those who have already been formed and they have brought me in as a third-party impartial because they're not doing so well. Excuse me, I reorganize sometimes, but sometimes the group feeling, the group dynamic doesn't really need to be changed, right? Their attitude towards each other needs to be changed, but the leadership style that they've gotten used to is okay, yeah? So I'm very aware of the fact that sometimes you're more democratic than others, right? Yeah, and that just has to do with giving control over the teams, right? Giving control equally to the participants. Instead of this is how we're going to do it, it's this, let's see if this is a viable option, let's talk about it and reach consensus, right? Right. Yeah, and really you don't give all your control because, of course, you still got control to lead them in the right direction. Yeah, it's kind of like, well, yes, but we're going to go in this direction because it makes sense, right? Right. Yes, and so it's a kind of a balancing act now, isn't it? Mm-hmm. And so is the networking, the getting to know each other, the unofficial hanging out that has to do with food. Remember that for Recipe for Peace now, I mean, you might be hungry, but food is really a tool. It's a tool to get us to do something. Mm-hmm. Something that we didn't think we wanted to do, but now we've gotten together, we've talked, the leader has perhaps gone around kind of, well, more privately and talked to the various people, maybe someone who was being less than civil, because that's why we had to call the time out, right? And the food is a tool to allow us to talk about something, to allow us to have a break from the formal discussions so that the leader can be asked questions and ask questions. and give instruction. Yeah, so it's all a good thing. Now, if you're going to have food in the room, and we are, like a potluck, we're going to take a survey ahead of time, and we're going to ask if anybody has a prohibition to a type of food, a food allergy, some sort of food they don't eat. We want everybody to have a good time, right? Right. We disseminate that information around to everyone. Mm-hmm. And then we also ask people to bring a list. What's a list? Well, the list is what's in the food, not what it is made of, right? Yes. And this list is good because then we can run our eye down the ingredients and find out if it's something we can eat, right? Because we've taken a survey, but sometimes people are unfamiliar. Now, I think we should have a safe recipe. A safe recipe is something that everybody can eat. We've taken the survey, and the food is very familiar to the people who would be in my group. That's an important part. You've eaten it before. You know that you can. Mm-hmm. Now, my group is different than your group. This is a multinational show. So if in your group a curry would be very, very common and everybody would be able to eat it in your group because you took the survey, go for it. In my group, a curry would be an adventure recipe, something that people haven't necessarily had before, and it might have something that maybe might be a bit of an adventure, although we did take a survey, but I'm very careful about common ones like seafood and peanuts and things like that. So this is our safe recipe. We're going to do it first. I don't know if we'll have time for two of them, although that was my goal, but we've got like 7 minutes. Oh, well, we had a fabulous discussion, though. Thank you all for being here. The safe recipe this time, because I'm trying to do them in order of how long they've been on the informational on the cover of this show. The safe one is going to be a pasta with beans and beef. Very delicious, very hearty. I approve of things that can be spooned out with a little serving spoon. Take as much or as little as you want. Mm-hmm. Okay. So we're going to have a tablespoon of oil. We might need a speck more, but you'll see how it goes. Let's have about 2 pounds of beef that we're actually going to cut into chunks, into cubes. You could use what we call stew meat out here. It's already in cubes. I don't know if you have it where you are, but you cut them into like 1-inch cubes, smallish cubes, like a nice mouthful, not a huge one, because meat's a little, no matter how you cook it, is not so tough, and you don't want to have people chewing too hard. Let's have a nice big onion, a nice sweet one that we're going to chop real nice and fine. I like a thing called Vidalia. It's a sweet onion. I don't like the bitter ones. Let's have a couple stalks of celery. You know, the leaves are edible. I don't necessarily pull all the leaves off my celery. Let's have about 3 nice big stalks, depending on how big they are. Let's chop them up. I actually leave the leaves on. If that offends you, you can take them off. 4 cloves of garlic, which we're also going to chop. I use a lot of garlic. If you think I use too much, use less garlic, because you can't pull them out. They're chopped. Let's have a couple of 16-ounce cans of crushed tomatoes, the juice and all. I know you want to use stewed tomatoes that you've made from your farm. That would be fabulous. But I'm going to use the can of crushed because it's also delicious and it's real convenient. So 2 cans or 1 30-ounce can, but like they're like 16-ounce cans. Yeah, 2 of those. Let's have a couple of, I'm afraid I'm going to use can again. If you want, you can make real beans that you soak overnight and like that. I'm going to use couple of 16-ounce cans of chickpeas, and they're also called cannellini beans, yeah. Mm-hmm. And the main thing to know, you know the tomatoes, you use the juice in the can because it's delicious and it works well. Beans, never. They're in slime. You take those beans out of the slime, you throw the slime away, you rinse them underneath cold water, and you also kind of give them a brisk, like a rub without squishing them, because if there are loose shells, you throw those away too. They're not poisonous or anything, but they're going to float in your stew and look really ugly. And so you want to throw away all the loose shells that also are the skins. Yeah, the skins for the beans. Mm-hmm. Let's have a half teaspoon of dried oregano and a half teaspoon of basil. Right? Yum, yum. About a pound. I like lots of beef and not so much pasta. I must admit this. If you would like lots of pasta, also get 2 pounds of pasta. You need to have, don't get the kind you need tongs for. It's too messy. Get the individual pieces of pasta like a rotini or a shell or a bow tie or something like that that you can just spoon out. Very much neater, very lot nicer. And let's have about a half a cup of beef broth. We'll take a look at it and see how we're doing liquid-wise. So we're going to, of course, make the pasta. We're going to boil it and drain it and al dente and the whole bit and set it aside. Then we're going to heat the oil, nice big skillet. We're going to season the beef with the oregano, a little bit of salt, right? And we're going to add it to the skillet, cook on all sides. What we're doing is we're sealing in the beef, right, so that it's nice. 2 minutes each side. Turn, all nice and brown on the outside. Not really cooked through, but brown on the outside. We're going to, as we brown them, we're going to take the meat out of the skillet and put it on a plate, just keep it warm. I put a piece of aluminum wrap over them because it keeps them from getting dried out. That nice skillet with all the beef drippings and like that. We're going to add the onion and the celery, 5 minutes until it gets kind of nice. Then we're going to add the garlic. That only takes a minute more because garlic is fast and it's all small pieces. Then we're going to stir in the tomatoes and the beans that we, of course, washed off. The rest of the oregano, because we didn't use all of it on the meat. And the basil. And a little bit of beef broth, right? And we're going to bring everything to a boil. Reduce the heat. Simmer it covered for about 15 minutes. It'll get some of the watery out, and it also makes everything blend together very deliciously. Mm-hmm. We've already got the pasta cooked, right? We've got everything's been simmering. We've stirred it occasionally. It smells fabulous. It looks like it tastes fabulous, which it does. Mm-hmm. We're going, and we've got our pasta to the side there. It's kind of gotten cold. Let's put the pasta back into the pot. Add the bean mixture, the cooked beef, and everything else. Actually, if you've made if you did the mixture with the tomatoes and everything in a big enough pot, I actually use a huge pot, just use the bottom, and then I throw the pasta back in and stir it around. I don't make another pot, is what it really is. Mm-hmm. And we're going to put the meat back in, right? Everything is now cooked. It's all yummy. It's all incorporated because we're going to heat it and stir it real good. Mm-hmm. And we could even cover it and then stir it every few minutes just to make sure everything's incorporated, right? And we had cooked the outside of the beef. If you want the beef not to be kind of medium inside, you want it to be cooked straight, you want it to cook really hard, you have to cook it harder to begin with and leave it in the pot longer. The 2 minutes run out to, what, 3-4 minutes. I like my meat a little bit on the softer side. I'm not big on it being cooked extremely well. I like it to be medium rare even. Yeah, so that's a judgment call. Also, it depends on the quality of your meat. Right, because you don't want it to be so chewy people need iron teeth. Mm-hmm. So we've got it all incorporated. It's all nice and hot because everything's been rewarmed, like the pasta's been rewarmed and the meat's been rewarmed. We're in. Let's serve it. And I told you I like to have pasta pieces that are biggish so that we can handle them. Delicious. Easy to make. Easy to eat. We've taken our survey. My friends, we are out of time. Thank you very much for being here. Thank you for listening. Yes, we will get to the pork and vegetable stew next time. Yeah, I had a nasty feeling, but we did make one of them. That was pretty good. One recipe. Thank you for being here. Thank you for all of your participation. If you would like to find us, we're at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. The website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Prior shows, they're archived on that website. Thank you for listening. Thank you for coming. Thank you for all of your participation. And please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.